But what are some of the ones that you would rank near the top of red flags that are not cholesterol and blood pressure?
Yeah, so red flags don't always have a direct cause and effect, meaning if we correct the red flag, it doesn't mean your risk is going to completely go away. But red flags definitely have the data to support there's an association, that if you have one of these things, there's data to support that you have an elevated risk for the development of a potential heart attack or stroke. So the red flags that are most causative and the most concerning are those that create an inflammatory backdrop in our arterial system. So things like rheumatoid arthritis, psoriasis, which you mentioned. For women, women have a lot of clues that are often ignored, sadly. Things like hypertension during pregnancy, or even that continuing, and you get a condition called preeclampsia, polycystic ovarian syndrome, gestational diabetes, migraine with aura, on medical history. All of those are, yes, what we call red flags. And if anyone has any of those, they should consider themselves potentially at risk and they should get a full assessment.
And a full assessment meaning not just a cholesterol, blood sugar, and blood pressure assessment, but you actually suggest quite a few other tests that are less commonly prescribed.
We do. So the approach that we discuss in the book is really a three-aspect approach. So the first thing is to find out if you have plaque or inflammation in the wall of the artery. And there's tests that we talk about in the book. One that is kind of a workhorse tool for us is called the carotid intima media thickness test. And this test is an ultrasound test. It's very safe. It's been around for a long time. It's been backed by the American Heart Association since 2001 as a safe, reliable, reproducible test that looks at the wall of the artery for the presence or absence of plaque. That's a test that can be done on anyone from a very young age all the way up to an older age to say, you may feel fine, but your body may silently be depositing plaque or fatty streaks in the wall of the artery. So that's one test. There's some others we talk about in the book, too. And the cost of these tests, David, that I think a lot of people need to hear this out loud, is that they're not expensive. These tests are usually under $200. The lab tests are pennies, $20 oftentimes. The genetic tests are very inexpensive. When you consider the cost of a heart attack is upwards of $500,000 when you consider loss of job productivity and so forth, and that's assuming you live through it. So these tests are extremely cost effective. So starting out with the idea of I want to know if I have plaque, and not just looking at where blood flows, the lumen, if you will, of the artery, but looking at the wall, and this carotid ultrasound is one way, and there are others, but that's one way to do it. The other tests that we talk about a lot in the book are inflammatory tests. So there's tests that can be done, and they're very simple. They're blood tests and a couple of urine tests that are pretty much done at any lab in the country. You just need to know what to ask for. So if you've already had a heart attack, already had a stroke, or perhaps you have some red flags or a family history, and you want to know if your treatment is working or if you are at risk, get your inflammatory tests checked. You shouldn't have any inflammation in your arterial system at all, because if you have inflammation, that precedes you to grow plaque in the arteries, and it can be very scary because it can cause a unannounced plaque rupture and subsequent blood clot, which ultimately is what causes a heart attack or stroke. And then the other tests that we talk about in the book are testing that's required to find out what truly are your root causes that may place you at risk for the development of disease. You mentioned one, vitamin D deficiency. Your show is based out of Portland, Oregon, and the reality is a lot of people in the Pacific Northwest are vitamin D deficient. There's enough data now to suggest that is a player in the development of vascular inflammation and vascular disease. Getting tested for obstructive sleep apnea, getting tested for unaddressed anxiety, getting bacterial testing to know if you have pathogens that can cause gum inflammation in our mouth that also cross over to vascular inflammation, etc. So we talk about that in the book, and they all go beyond the current cholesterol panel, which is important, but it's not all-inclusive.
So, Amy, we're going to have you hold on and invite Justin into the studio to talk about how people can get a copy of Beat the Heart Attack Gene, and we'll be back with you in a couple minutes.
Wonderful. Thank you.
And thank you, David. Dr. David Naiman here hosting Health Watch. My name is Justin, and it is our winter membership drive, and we are asking listeners to show a little support to make sure that the community radio that serves the entire area is able to do it for another 23 million commercial-free minutes. Won't you call us right now? Toll-free 877-500-5266.
No.
877-500-5266 is the number to call, and we can give you a copy of that book, Beat the Heart Attack Gene, the Revolutionary Plan to Prevent Heart Disease and Stroke. I'm looking at this. It looks like a very good book. A minimum $60 gift will get that into your hands. $60 when you call 877-500-5266. You know, that's going to amount to 16 cents a day towards the more than $2,000 it costs us to service your community radio station, dear listeners. One penny, one nickel, one dime each day, and we can give you Beat the Heart Attack Gene. You know, this is really unique programming, and I consider this to be at the heart of KBOO's mission. Health Watch doesn't come in here to hawk pharmaceuticals. You know, this is really has been a long-standing project to educate and to give alternatives, to look at sustainability from the perspective of the body. And you're not going to find that on the right side of the dial. We're not delivering you into the hands of advertisers. We are working tirelessly to deliver information to you to help your health, to help the entire community, and we're asking you to make a small statement of support. 877-500-5266. This is a labor of love for Dr. Naiman, just as it is for all of our programmers. No one's telling them what to cover. No one's paying them to do it. They're doing it because of their love of the information and because of their civic mindedness, shall we say, that they want to get this information out. All they ask is that they make their program goal. It's sort of a point of pride around these hallowed halls, shall we say, bragging rights. $500 is the modest goal for today, and we have a little less than an hour to do it, but thousands of you listening, so many hands makes light lifting. You can do it online. Start your membership. We'll get you a copy of that book, kboo.fm, or you can call us right now and introduce yourself. Say thank you to Dr. Naiman for all of the guests he has had over quite a period of time. Call us toll-free, 877-500-KBOO.
We're back with Amy Doning, the co-author of Beat the Heart Attack Gene, the Revolutionary Plan to Prevent Heart Disease, Stroke, and Diabetes. So, Amy, before we get into some of the nutritional lifestyle and medication interventions, I just had one question about the disconnect between this information and what people get when they go to see their doctor. For instance, you mentioned that waist circumference is more important predictor of heart disease risk than our weight itself, something that could be very simply measured in the doctor's office, but instead they're still measuring weight. And some of these cheap tests that you mentioned are not hard to order, but yet we're still sticking with a outdated system of risk assessment. Why do you think that is?
Well, let me address the waist issue, and then I think I want to talk about the why. But, you know, one of the most prominent root causes is something called insulin resistance. It claims responsibility for about 70% of plaque growth in the wall of the artery and claims responsibility of about 70% of vascular inflammation. And sadly, the current system, medicine as it sets up now, really is driven to treat end-stage disease. So the end-stage disease of insulin resistance is called type 2 diabetes. So once insulin resistance has gone on for about 20 years and someone becomes actually a type 2 diabetic, then they get all kinds of treatment. But the problem is, during that 20-year path towards type 2 diabetes, the condition of insulin resistance is extremely inflammatory for the walls of the artery. So what we talk about in the book are ways to find that early. One of them is what you mentioned, grabbing a waist measurement. If you can diagnose a condition called metabolic syndrome, which includes this elevated waist measurement, and for women, a waist over 35 inches, doesn't matter how tall or how short you are, over 35 inches is a point towards a criteria called metabolic syndrome, and for men it's over 40 inches. What's not included on the criteria is weight, body mass index, but waist is. And in the current system, that's not part of a formal workup. So that's a very cheap tool and a very life-saving tool. If you carry the dangerous fat or adipose cells around the middle, it places you at risk for insulin resistance, metabolic syndrome, type 2 diabetes. So thank you for bringing that up. That's a very cost-effective tool and should be part of a normal standard workup.
So let's go on to diet and exercise and lifestyle choices. Where do you see them fit in comparison to medications? I know it's not an either or, but how would you rank them in terms of their ability to change risk factors?
Well, I think lifestyle is number one. I think there's no medicine that can get to what an optimal lifestyle can reach. Sadly, because this is a very genetically driven disease state, and once plaque is already formed in the artery wall, oftentimes we do need to augment a lifestyle with some medication therapy. That's true. But lifestyle is definitely the most effective approach to treat vascular disease without.
So could you mention some of the more more effective lifestyle interventions?
Sure. One thing I want to make note of is we guide our lifestyle advice based on our genetic predisposition. So we talk about a gene in the book called the ApoE gene, which is very inexpensive and easy to get. The ApoE gene is found on chromosome 19. It's very well studied, and there's certain alleles to this gene, so you're going to inherit one from your mom and one from your dad. So depending on your ApoE status, we can predetermine how you're going to process things like fats, carbohydrates, sugars and alcohol, for example, how your body's going to respond to exercise. So when we offer lifestyle advice, we base it on our genetic makeup, allowing us to get to the unique individual needs of the patient. And that's really important because a lot of people that have spent a lifetime of trying to make excellent choices and yet their laboratory results or clinical results haven't demonstrated the effectiveness of their lifestyle approaches, maybe it's because they're not doing quite the right thing based on their genetic makeup. Some people we want having a glass of wine every day or a glass of alcohol every day. Some people we don't. Some people we want on a higher fat diet, a lower fat diet. Some people won't get their lipids to turn around with even daily good exercise. Some people get a great response to exercise. It doesn't mean that exercise isn't important every single day regardless, but we gauge the benefit of it differently than just looking at cholesterol.
That was one of the more fascinating parts of the book was that we could actually figure out why some people thrive on a low-carb, high-fat diet and others on the reverse.
Yeah, it is fascinating because when you look at these diet trends out there, and some are very good, some work great for some people, and the next person can do the same thing, and they don't get the benefit, and we think, gosh, are they doing something wrong or whatever? No, the problem is we are all unique, and yet a mass diet will not work for every person in the same way. So understanding our genetics, and again, the test is about $20, and you never have to repeat it. It's a very inexpensive test. And the technology, though, and the science surrounding something like ApoE continues to grow. Scientists are continuing to look at ApoE gene, among others we talk about in the book. So even though you may only need it tested once, we are learning more and more every day about how to fine-tune advice and lifestyle treatment based on that knowledge that we have. So I think that's the best way to go with lifestyle advice, and it also makes sense why some people will respond to differently to different diet mechanisms.
But certainly there are some things that probably everybody should do. For instance, sure. You mentioned flossing twice a day, seeing your dentist mm-hmm. more regularly, and I'm imagining avoiding sugary drinks, which seem to have quite a link to heart attack and stroke risk.
Right. So just some really safe global pieces of advice are those. I love that you said that. So yes, flossing twice a day, going to the dentist more frequently to keep the inflammation down, listening to music you enjoy, sleeping well, exercising every day, at least 22 minutes a day of some sort of cardiovascular exercise and intertwine a couple days a week of some good resistant type training as well. Also getting adequate fruits and vegetables in your diet, good fish on a regular basis if you're not a vegan or vegetarian seems to be pretty good advice across the board. So there are some good, sound lifestyle pieces that seem to affect everyone in a very good way, for sure.
So, Amy, we're going to invite Justin back in, and then when we come back in a couple minutes, I'd love to talk about the best and worst supplements for people who are on a heart prevention program.
Okay, super.
So, Justin, tell our listeners how people can get Beat the Heart Attack Gene if they become a new member.
Ah, thank you, Dr. Naiman. Yes, we can put this book into your hands, dear listeners. You need only call us up and introduce yourself. 877-500-5266 is the toll-free number to call from anywhere in North America. And if you could start or renew your membership, at least at the $60 level, we can send you a copy of Beat the Heart Attack Gene. This is some really fabulous information, and I was thinking how different this is from, say, what commercial media might sound like. It seems to me we'd be assuming that everyone would be doing all the same thing, and it's some miracle fad diet with some pill made by some company who's also sponsoring the program. It's such a different model here at KBOO, where our volunteers like Dr. David Naiman spend the time doing the research based on their expertise, based on community need, based on your needs, dear listener. Won't you call up and make a small show of support? It's not even really the amount of money that you choose to give. It is that you stand up and be counted. It's that we can add your name to the good book. Won't you call us up and have your name added to the KBOO Good Book? That's toll-free, 877-500-5266. I'm really not sure what more Dr. Naiman could do. We know who listeners give for their reasons, not for ours, but every week for quite a long time now, Dr. David Naiman has given you reasons. So please think of those right now as you click over to KBOO.FM or move over to your phone and call us toll free, 877-500-5266. Again, just $60 gets you a copy of Beat the Heart Attack Gene by Bradley Bale and Amy Donin. In fact, maybe, dear listeners, you could start a $120 sustaining membership and give 33 cents a day out of the more than $2,000. And then we could even send you two copies of that book and you could give one. This sounds to me like there is information that is vital for everyone all around. And in fact, I only have five copies total, and I think some of them have gone. So don't wait too long to call up and introduce yourself at toll-free 877-500-5266. Over 23 million commercial-free minutes and counting, and we are so proud of that. You know, if you squint at it just right, we could be interpreted as the oldest independent community radio station in the nation. Outside of the Pacifica Network, I would say that honor falls to us, and I hope that you won't take this for granted. Sometimes it becomes like moral furniture that when we've been around this long and giving away our signature product, that is our content, you might say, well, it doesn't matter whether I call. But imagine how much more we can do. Imagine how much stronger we get if more than one in every 10 is showing that support. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to guilt the 9 of every 10 of you who haven't made that call. I'm actually here to alleviate that guilt and give you a way out. You can unclench, and, you know, that creates stress, which is not good, and that can lead to inflammation. So that's not what you want. So we figure that KBOO is actually directly related to your health. So please don't resist. Don't resist. Just pick up your phone and introduce yourself. It's only going to take a moment. We're not going to ask you how long did you listen before you called up or any jibber jabber like that. We're going to be grateful, and you're going to get an increased signal quality that only comes when you make it possible. Toll free, 877-500-5266. It's another way we're challenging apathy and asking people to get involved. Please don't wait for someone else to do it. You've tried that before. So let's do a little science. I think this goes well with what we're listening to. Let's do a little bit of science. You have had the experience of listening to your community radio station as a passive listener. Don't take my word for it. Let's compare that. Let's compare that to the feeling that you get when you make it possible, when you engage in a little bit of checkbook activism. Let's sweeten the pot here. You're going to receive a membership card, and that's going to give you discounts at scores and scores of businesses. You're going to get your money back. And we're going to send you this book, Beat the Heart Attack Gene, the revolutionary plan to prevent heart disease, stroke, and diabetes. I mean, there isn't anyone who's listening who doesn't want to prevent heart disease. So I think that we have sweetened the pot here. We like to sweeten the pot at your community radio station. So please, don't wait for someone else to do it. You've tried that. Let's engage in a little science. Let's show your support for Dr. David Naiman and indeed the thousands of volunteers who have come through these hallowed halls. Toll free right now, 877-500-KBOO.
We're back with Amy Doning, the co-author of Beat the Heart Attack Gene, the Revolutionary Plan to Prevent Heart Disease, Stroke, and Diabetes. So Amy, in our final few minutes, I would love to talk about the supplements to avoid and the ones that seem most beneficial to help treat or prevent heart disease. It was a very fascinating part of the book.
Wonderful. So there are supplements that we do think have merit, and we're very evidence-based. The back of the book has about 60 pages of full resources there, so it's an evidence-based method. So some of the supplements that have really shown excellent data include, believe it or not, dark chocolate. So dark chocolate, if it's 72% or greater in its cocoa content, at 7 grams per day, actually reduces stroke and heart attack risk, and also mitigates some of the inflammation post-meals from high sugars for those people who are insulin resistant. So we do recommend dark chocolate. The darker, the better. Coffee has some great data to reduce AFib and also has good cardiovascular data. Omega-3 fatty acid, which is fish oil, and certainly if you can get that through eating whole fish, that's a wonderful way to go. Or we do recommend fish oil omega-3 supplements as well. Some supplements we don't recommend specifically for cardiovascular health. One that we don't recommend anymore is called L-carnitine. We used to recommend that for people who had a genetically inherited lipid abnormality called lipoprotein A, and data came out about 6 months ago suggesting unless you were doing a true vegan type diet that recommending L-carnitine was not the way to go, and that was some of Stan Hazen's work. So we certainly follow the data as it comes out, and what I like to do is have my patients bring in everything in their medicine cabinet. I'm very objective and evidence-based, so we'll look at the data and determine if it's a good move or not such a good move. Some supplements are benign and they're not going to be harmful at all, which is great. Some have some data that's pretty exciting, and some have some data that seems a bit counterintuitive. So,
can you talk a little bit about calcium, since so many people are on it for bone health, and it's starting to show some disturbing information?
Yeah, that's a trouble, isn't it? So calcium supplementation started to show some data a couple years ago suggesting that the supplements had an increased risk of heart attacks in women, actually, in the supplements at 500 milligrams or greater per day showed an increase of coronary calcification, and also it teased out to even show event rate elevation. It does not mean, though, that people should not get calcium. The authors of the research, and we would recommend as well, David, that people who especially have osteopenia, which is bone thinning, or osteoporosis, which is bone loss, still need adequate calcium, you know, about 1,200 milligrams a day minimum. But perhaps really challenge your daily diet and get your nutrients of calcium and other vital nutrients through a whole diet. That's really our recommendation. Because what we're finding, even with calcium and even the antioxidants published in work years ago, that they really don't pan out for the health benefit if taken in supplement form. Not all of them, but a lot of them. So we really recommend getting all of our nutrients, if we can, through a whole diet.
So it sounds like vitamin D might be the one exception in that regard, also partially because it's hard to get in the diet.
Yeah, that's right, and I didn't mention that, and thank you for bringing it up. Vitamin D is something very common. We do measure for levels, and we're finding so many people are low, and we do supplement with vitamin D3, actually over-the-counter, and a lot of patients are taking it to get those levels up to where they need to be, so that is another really common supplement.
Well, Amy, it was a pleasure having you on Health Watch today. I really enjoyed reading your book, Beat the Heart Attack Gene.
Thank you. Can I ask you to, one thing that I want to mention to people is that this book is written to the public. There's patient stories in here that each scientific concept is articulated through a patient story, and I don't want people to be afraid to read it. I don't want them to think it's too technical, and it really is written to the public. The evidence is there. It's all fully referenced, which is good, but our hope is that people read this book, the public, take the information into their medical provider and ask for these tests.
Thanks, Amy. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to cut you off because we're out of time, but it was a pleasure having you on Health Watch today.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to KBOO, your community radio station, on 90.7 FM. Up next, Radio Zine is going to have a special guest, a feminist activist and professor and author, Lynn Siegel, who'll be talking about her new book, Out of Time, The Pleasures and Perils of Aging.
This is Kathleen Stevenson for KBOO Public Affairs. Out of Time, The Pleasures and Perils of Aging is a new book by Lynn Siegel. Lynn Siegel is anniversary professor of psychology and gender studies in the Department of Psychosocial Studies at Birkbeck College. Her books include Is the Future Female?, Troubled Thoughts on Contemporary Feminism, Slow Motion, Changing Masculinities, Changing Men, and Straight Sex, Rethinking the Politics of Pleasure. Lynn Siegel, thanks very much for being with us and speaking with me today. Good morning.
Good morning. It's lovely to be here.
Why did you want to write about aging, particularly aging for women?
Well, as you may know, aging is becoming increasingly a topic of the moment, and that's because suddenly, everyone is thinking about the fact that we're all living longer. We're actually living a whole generation longer than we did a century ago. And, you know, all the time we're continuing to live longer. And yet, despite the fact we're living longer, there seems to be a growing fear of being old. So that at ever younger ages, people are starting to worry about being old. And in particular, there's been attacks on my generation, the baby boomer generation born in or just after the Second World War, as being the greedy, selfish generation. And this is tied in with saying that we're fine and we're all getting pensions and it's the young ones who are suffering now and somehow it's all our fault. So I just wanted to present a different voice about aging, one that could counter some of the fears that are there and also help us to think differently, to get richer and better narratives about old age.
In Out of Time, you have personal reflections, and you talk some about your own emotional response to aging. Can you relate some of that?
That's right, because I just said partly I wrote it thinking about the social situation generally, that we are living longer and we need to think about it differently. But I also wrote it to think about my own fears and anxieties around aging. I just turned 70 this year. I was in my late 60s when I was writing the book. And I, like everybody else, was beset by these demons of fear about, you know, what does it mean to grow old? How can we grow old and think through all the different possibilities of what it is to live a long life?
Mm-hmm.
If we're increasingly going to be living long lives, we need to think about how to do that well. And I found that reading more and more about it and reading about its contradictions and paradoxes, the way in which we so often feel that We don't feel our age. We don't feel old. And yet at the same time, we're very aware that we are old, and we're very aware that the world sees us as old and is increasingly dismissing us, particularly as older women, as old. So women tend to get aged first, that is, to be removed from the media and to, well, sometimes to be discarded by their partners as well, and find it harder to couple up again. So there are all sorts of issues around the general fears of aging, many of which are, as I've said, projected first of all onto women. All the worst images of the old, the witch, the harrod and the Medusa, these are all images of older women, that somehow old age itself and all the negative things about it have tended to be in particular attached to women. So it's trying to face up to that and beat that back, you know, which it seems to me that someone like me, who's been a feminist for most of my life, ought to be able to think more clearly about how we're going to do that.
In your book, the whole connection between feminism as it relates to aging is a theme. And I wonder if you could talk a bit about that, about how feminism relates to aging.
Yes, well, when second wave feminist begins at the close of the 1960s, most of us are very young and bushy-tailed, and of course, as we look back, all thinking of ourselves now, looking back, as rather beautiful. And our big problem, as we saw it, was pushing away the sort of intrusive sexist glances we might get, that you know, we were getting more attention than we wanted, and so we wanted to be more in control of ourselves as people who could be agents of our own lives and agents of our own pleasure. And what I think was harder to think about is what happens when you're off that sexual radar, what happens and happens to older women from around their 40s onwards, that they're no longer going to be subject to this intrusive staring and whistling. In fact, they're going to be rendered increasingly invisible. And I think it can be quite hard to suddenly think, so how do we deal with this new situation, having had all this unwanted attention, of having been made synonymous